So I want you to just picture this scenario for a second. It is 5:21 p.m. on a Friday.
Oh, the absolute worst possible time for anything to happen.
Right. Literally the worst. You are, winding down for the week, maybe closing out your last few Jira tickets.
Yeah, getting ready to just finally shut your laptop.
Exactly. And then suddenly, your entire application dashboard just lights up with errors.
Just a wall of red.
A total wall of red. A core dependency in your company's tech stack has simply vanished. Just gone.
And your first thought is always, oh, it's a server outage. Right.
Right. You check the status pages, expecting to see AWS or Azure having a glitch. But it's not a glitch. Your cloud provider didn't go down at all.
It's something much, much bigger.
Yeah, it was Anthropic. The company behind those massive flagship AI models, Fable 5 and Mythos 5, they had just received a letter from the U.S. government.
And not just a polite request, but a directive citing national security authorities.
Exactly. The directive demands an immediate suspension of access for any foreign national.
Which is wild when you think about the timing.
Oh, it's a nightmare. Because of how cloud architecture works, you can't just, surgically filter out users by passport at 5:30 on a Friday evening.
Right, the infrastructure just isn't built for that kind of instant, granular, geographic filtering.
No, it's not. So to actually comply with this legal order, they have to just pull the plug completely
Right,
for everyone,
including you sitting there at your desk.
including you. Your access is gone. And that is exactly what we're getting into today. Welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive, where our mission is to unpack an article titled "The Kill Switch Was Always There."
It is such a fascinating read because what happened on that specific Friday night, it fundamentally reshaped the entire landscape of enterprise AI.
It really did. It shifted the whole conversation from this theoretical debate about, vendor reliability to a literal practical emergency.
What's fascinating here is how the whole concept of sovereign risk just transitioned overnight.
Yeah,
We
totally.
used to view it as this abstract legal footnote, right? Just buried on like page 40 of some terms of service agreement that nobody ever reads.
Just a checkbox you click when signing up.
Exactly. But
Yeah.
now it is a hard, unavoidable design constraint in AI architecture. I mean, cloud services have outages all the time.
Sure, servers overheat or some undersea cable gets cut by a shark.
Right, exactly. But a deliberate government-mandated blackout of a foundational model, that introduces an entirely different category of threat to your infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's look at the actual mechanics of how we arrived at that Friday night blackout. Because the article makes a really compelling case that Anthropic's own marketing strategy might have, well, kind of laid a trap for them.
Yeah, that marketing angle is critical. But first, the trigger for the government's directive was supposedly a specific method someone found to bypass Fable's safeguards.
Right. Let's talk about that bypass for a second.
So the mechanism here is basically an adversarial input. A lot of people call it a jailbreak.
Right, where you trick the AI.
Yeah, you structure a prompt in a highly specific, convoluted way to just confuse the model's internal safety classifier.
So the model is basically tricked into ignoring its own core instructions and generating restricted content.
Precisely, it bypasses the system prompt entirely.
Now, Anthropic's defense came out immediately, right? They didn't just take this quietly.
No, not at all. They argued that this demonstration only surfaced a very small number of previously known, relatively minor vulnerabilities.
And they also pointed fingers a bit, didn't they?
They did. They explicitly pointed out that other widely available models on the market, specifically OpenAI's GPT-5.5, possess those exact same comparable capabilities natively.
Meaning you don't even need some complex jailbreak bypass to get similar outputs from a competitor.
Right. You just ask the competitor's model and it gives it to you.
Which is a crucial point. But we need to be really clear here. We are not taking sides on whether the government was justified in dropping the hammer like
No,
this.
absolutely not.
And we aren't taking a stance on whether Anthropic was unfairly targeted compared to OpenAI or anyone else. We are just reporting the facts of the event.
Because there are going to be armies of lawyers and regulators arguing about this for years.
Oh, yeah. And inevitably, there's going to be at least one cybersecurity consultant with, like, a 57 slide deck billing thousands of hours to litigate those exact merits.
Oh, for sure. But our focus is strictly on the mechanics of what happened and the structural fallout for anyone building in this space.
Right. So let's get back to that structural fallout. It really begins with how Fable 5 was positioned in the market to begin with.
Yeah, they did not market Fable 5 as just some standard run-of-the-mill chatbot for, writing polite emails to your boss.
No, the text notes, they pitched it aggressively. They called it a mythos-level model, built for ambitious, highly complex work.
They were constantly boasting about its robust safeguards, especially for critical, sensitive
Like
domains.
cybersecurity and biology, right?
Exactly. They highlighted all these automatic routing systems that push high-risk prompts into secure enclaves.
And they also mandated strict 30-day data retention requirements just for safety monitoring alone.
Which is a massive signal to the market. And the pricing structure totally mirrored that premium high-security positioning.
Let's talk about that pricing because it's wild. Fable was listed at $10 per million input tokens.
And $50 per million output tokens?
$50. That is roughly twice the standard API rate for their own Opus 4.8 model.
It's a huge jump.
Let's ground that difference for a second for anyone listening who might be wondering why output is so much more expensive. It reveals a lot about the compute intensity, right?
Oh, definitely. H output tokens costing 5 times more than input tokens isn't just some arbitrary corporate markup.
Right. Generating tokens requires sequential autoregressive compute.
Yeah, the model actually has to predict the next word, hold the entire massive context in its VRAM, and then repeat that process over and over.
Whereas processing the input prompt is just done in parallel, so it's much cheaper.
Exactly. So by charging $50 per million output tokens, Anthropic was loudly signaling to the world that this model is a heavy industrial-grade compute engine.
Doing serious analytical lifting.
Yes. But that industrial-grade framing is a double-edged sword.
Completely. And there's this brilliant quote from a cybersecurity researcher in the source that perfectly captures this dilemma.
I love this quote. Call your model ammunition often enough, and a government will eventually treat it as one.
Wow. Yeah, that is the crux of the entire issue right there.
Yeah.
Capability framing sells, but capability framing also attracts sovereign control.
It really does.
It makes me think of imagine a car manufacturer building a new vehicle, right?
Yeah.
And they run all these glossy, high-budget
Like
ads.
Super Bowl commercials.
Exactly. And the ads say, this isn't just a car. It is the speed, the radar evasion, and the tactical power of a military fighter jet.
Sounds awesome.
Right? And they price it like a jet. They specifically market it to high-end defense contractors.
Okay, I see where this is going.
But then they act completely shocked and offended when a federal agency steps in and says, wait, if this is literally a jet, you cannot just sell it on the open market.
You need a fighter pilot's license.
Yes. You need a license and a federal background check.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
That is a perfect analogy. The mismatch between marketing hype and regulatory reality is just severe in this industry.
Because when you frame a product around its immense, potentially dangerous capabilities, that narrative is an incredible asset during venture capital fundraising.
Oh, VCs, eat that up. It proves to investors that you are building the bleeding edge of the future.
But that exact same narrative becomes a massive company-ending liability the second a national security regulator reads your press release.
Exactly.
I will push back on the regulatory logic just slightly, though, just looking at Anthropic's defense.
Sure.
If they're factually correct that models like GPT 5.5 have the exact same capabilities natively without even needing a bypass,
Right.
doesn't a targeted ban on Fable 5 indicate a deeply flawed regulatory framework?
Right.
I mean, why does one model get the sudden kill switch while the other just gets to keep processing API calls?
It's a fair question. But the perceived fairness of the intervention is honestly secondary to how export controls actually function in practice.
Because they aren't exactly known for being fair and balanced, are they?
No, not at all. Regulatory bodies, especially those dealing with national security and foreign access, they rarely wait for perfect market parity before acting.
They don't have time to audit everyone simultaneously.
Right. Export controls aimed at foreign nationals are incredibly blunt instruments. They move fast.
So when a government decides a threshold has been crossed,
Say, triggered by a highly public demonstration of a bypass, they act on the immediate target right in front of them.
they just swing the hammer.
Exactly. The takeaway for anyone building in this space isn't about whether one lab was treated fairly compared to another lab.
Right.
The real takeaway is that if you convince the market you've built strategic infrastructure, the sovereign authority is going to govern it as strategic infrastructure.
Your marketing can be completely 100% factually accurate, and it still serves as policy evidence against you. So what does this all mean when regulatory reality violently collides with venture capital? because the financial math changes literally overnight.
Oh, the financial ripple effects of this are just staggering.
Let's look at that fallout, because this intervention did not happen in a vacuum. The timing of this Friday night blackout is just wild.
It's almost unbelievable.
According to the article, just 11 days prior on June 1st, Anthropic had confidentially submitted a draft S-1 to the SEC.
For a proposed initial public offering.
Yes. 11 days before their core product is forced offline globally.
It's the ultimate nightmare for a CFO.
Adding to that immense pressure, Reuters had just reported a massive $65 billion raise.
Which placed Anthropic at a staggering $965 billion post-money valuation.
Almost $1 trillion.
Yeah.
If you're an institutional investor looking at that S-1, how do you possibly price in the risk that a federal agency can just zero out the company's primary revenue stream with a single Friday evening letter?
You can't. It is a massive, unpaper overable risk factor.
Especially when you consider the existing friction they already had with the government.
Right. The text notes that earlier this year, the Pentagon labeled Anthropic a supply chain risk.
Which a federal judge temporarily blocked back in March.
True, but the administration is still actively defending that move in court.
So you have a company standing on the precipice of a historic public offering, deeply embedded in the enterprise ecosystem, and their flagship product is completely vulnerable to an administrative kill switch.
It fundamentally changes how every board of directors views business risk now.
It's like, imagine building a massive, highly optimized logistics network for your business, right?
Okay.
You lease this entire fleet of delivery trucks, and they run on a proprietary, highly efficient fuel provided by just one single vendor.
Like a super fuel.
Yeah. And your routes are perfect, your profit margins are great, you're dominating the market.
Sounds ideal.
But then, without any warning, the government bans the sale of that specific fuel due to a sudden environmental regulation. Your vendor didn't do anything malicious. Your trucks aren't broken. But your entire logistics network is just dead in the water.
And your inventory is totally stranded.
Exactly. Stranded.
And the stranded inventory in the AI case is global enterprise workflows.
Yes.
Just think about the international reaction to this. The source specifically mentions a bank in Frankfurt and a ministry in Singapore.
Because on that Friday, those institutions woke up to a terrifying realization.
A German bank, operating strictly under European Union laws, suddenly discovered that their critical internal infrastructure could disappear entirely.
Just vanish. By order of an American government that they do not elect and cannot influence?
Tom Tugendhat, a British MP and former security minister, summarized this geopolitical shift perfectly.
What does he say?
He stated that sovereignty now turns on who controls the code, not the cannons.
Who controls the code, not the cannons. That is a chilling quote.
It really is.
Because for years, we've sat and listened to these philosophical debates at tech conferences.
Yeah.
About open weights versus closed proprietary models.
Or the theoretical need for regional state-backed AI providers.
Right. All very academic.
Yeah.
But overnight, those debates stopped being philosophical.
They became necessary, urgent operational hedges.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the entire discipline of tech risk management just completely expanded.
Oh, without a doubt. Blind dependence on any single U.S. frontier model is now objectively reckless for a global enterprise.
Because historically, risk management for cloud services was just a commercial concern, right?
Yeah, you planned for a vendor raising their API prices by 20%, or maybe you built redundancies in case a server farm went offline for 4 hours due to a power failure.
But now, risk management is a geopolitical concern.
You aren't trying to predict the weather or the market. You're trying to predict the sudden actions of the State Department.
Which raises a really critical point about vendor diversification. Because if every U.S. frontier lab sits under this exact same sovereign control plane, as the text calls it, does single vendor risk essentially vanish, only to be replaced by this massive, all-encompassing sovereign risk?
That is the grim reality of it. You cannot just look at your board of directors after the Fable 5 blackout and say, don't worry, we will migrate everything to OpenAI or Google to be safe.
Because those are all American companies, too.
Exactly. They're all subject to the exact same export control laws, the same defense production acts, and the same national security directives.
So swapping to a quote-unquote safer U.S. lab does not eliminate the risk that the government will pull the plug.
It just changes the corporate logo printed on the plug.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. If the geopolitical weather can wipe out your stack, regardless of which vendor you choose. How do you actually armor your architecture?
That brings us to the most urgent part of this whole deep dive, the actual fix.
Right. What do you do on Monday morning?
Well, the article explicitly states the answer is not finding a safer vendor. The answer is architecture, specifically a very rigid two-layer approach.
And most engineering teams only ever build the first layer, right? Assuming that's totally enough.
Yeah, and that's a fatal mistake.
Let's break those layers down for you listening. Layer one is portability.
Right.
This means actively keeping your prompts, your external tools, your system memory, and your orchestration logic entirely out of a single provider's proprietary gravity well.
You have to use model agnostic interfaces.
Because in theory, this gives you the technical ability to point your data at a different server if your primary model goes down.
But layer two is the actual foundation that makes portability work in the real world. Layer two is verification.
Because swapping models is never a frictionless process.
Never.
I want to push back on the reality of even layer one, though. Because tech companies spend billions of dollars specifically designing their ecosystems to be sticky.
Oh, absolutely. They want you trapped.
Think about trying to seamlessly move a complex smart home setup from an Apple ecosystem over to a Google ecosystem overnight.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
It's horrible. It's not just unplugging a single hub. The APIs don't match. The communication schemas are totally different.
Suddenly your lights can't parse the commands from your thermostat.
Right, and all your automated morning routines just break. So is true portability actually a myth if you haven't done the exhausting, totally unglamorous work of verification?
It is entirely a myth, and that is exactly the core argument the author presents here.
They explicitly warn against it.
The source says, a drop-in replacement is rarely a drop-in. Consider the mechanics of how these models actually process information.
You can't just route a complex prompt designed specifically for Fable 5 into GPT 5.5 and expect the exact same outcome.
No, they differ wildly in how they parse contact windows.
Let's get specific on that for a second. How do they differ mechanically when you actually try to swap them?
Okay, take tool use, for example. Model A might require a highly specific XML tag structure to successfully call your company's internal weather API.
Okay, XML tags.
But Model B might expect that exact same request to be formatted as raw JSON. So if you just swap the routing without verifying the schema, the new model will spit out malformed code and your entire application will just crash.
It just breaks.
Oh.
Or consider refusal behavior, which is this massive hidden variable nobody thinks about until it's too late.
That's a huge one.
You might have a workflow that summarizes highly sensitive financial documents. Fable 5 might process those specific documents perfectly fine.
But if you fail over to a different model in a panic,
its internal safety rails might trigger a false positive refusal, flagging your financial data as a privacy violation.
Exactly. Your system didn't technically go offline, but your pipeline is broken anyway because the new model outright refuses to do the work.
Latency and cost are huge hidden factors too.
Oh, massively.
If your application requires a 500 millisecond response time to execute a high-speed financial trade, and your fallback model takes 2 full seconds to generate the output,
the workflow is effectively dead.
Dead. So portability just means you have the API keys to point the data at a different server.
Right. While verification means you know precisely what that new server will do with your data when it actually arrives.
So how does an engineering team actually build that verification layer? It sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting, but it requires building out comprehensive specs, continuous evaluations, and what the industry calls golden tasks.
What exactly is a golden task?
A golden task is essentially a highly complex unit test for an AI model.
Okay.
You run a highly specific, well-known prompt, say, extracting patient symptoms from a really messy medical transcript, and you verify mechanically that the model didn't hallucinate.
That it formatted the JSON output perfectly.
Yes, and that it completed the task within your strict latency and cost budgets. You establish absolute deployment nates based on these tasks.
The article puts it really bluntly. Without mathematical proof from these golden tasks saying, we can switch vendors, is just a hollow corporate slogan.
It means nothing. But with proof, switching becomes an actual operational capability.
The bottleneck in the AI industry right now isn't getting your hands on enough GPUs.
Or buying enough API tokens, right?
The real bottleneck is the profound lack of verified operating capability inside these enterprise teams.
The practical question that engineering leaders need to ask themselves isn't, do we trust Anthropic Or do we trust the U.S. government?
Right.
The practical question is, what physically breaks in our system if this model disappears in 5 minutes?
The author actually calls for the creation of a model dependency register. Platforms need to map exactly which critical workflows depend on which specific models.
And you have to define a recovery time objective, an RTO, for every single model dependency.
Like in traditional IT.
Exactly. In traditional disaster recovery, an RTO dictates exactly how much downtime a business can tolerate before facing catastrophic loss.
If your main SQL database goes down, your RTO might be 15 minutes.
We need to apply that exact same rigor to AI models. You have to build, test, and continuously update your fallback paths, including the exact prompts, the specific schemas, and the cost boundaries, well before you ever actually need them.
Because if you wait until Friday at 5:30, it is way too late.
Way too late.
Bringing this all together for you listening.
Yeah.
We started this deep dive with a Friday night kill switch.
Right.
A completely surreal moment where a flagship enterprise dependency was erased from the board.
Not by a technical failure, but by a sovereign directive.
Right. We explored how the very marketing that drives massive venture valuations, calling your system a highly capable, highly secure munition, is exactly what attracts that heavy regulatory hammer.
And we saw how a staggering $965 billion valuation can suddenly be tethered to the geopolitical anxieties of a local bank in Frankfurt or a minister in the UK.
It's that realization that code, not cannons, dictates modern sovereignty.
Exactly.
And we arrived at the architectural lifelines, portability to ensure you aren't trapped in a proprietary gravity well.
And verification to ensure your fallback plan actually works when the primary engine is violently ripped away.
Whether you are an executive signing the massive enterprise checks or a senior engineer writing the daily API calls, you have to acknowledge a new, totally uncomfortable reality.
The owner of the off switch is not you.
And it is not your cloud provider either. If your business relies on AI, you can no longer leave your disaster recovery to what the article brilliantly calls architecture folklore.
You cannot just assume you and your team will magically figure it out over the weekend if a model goes down.
Because the next blackout might not be a temporary weekend glitch while the lawyers negotiate in Washington.
It might be permanent.
It really might.
And that brings up a broader implication of all this, something I really think is worth mulling over as we wrap up today.
What's that?
Well, if we look at those growing anxieties in Frankfurt and Singapore, and we look at how sovereign risk is fundamentally altering the math of cloud architecture, it raises a massive question. As the barrier between a quote-unquote commercial SaaS tool and a national security munition completely dissolves, will the future of enterprise AI be forced offline?
Wow, that is a staggering thought. That would reverse the entire trend of the tech industry.
Just consider the trajectory. If foreign governments and multinational corporations realize that cloud-based AI can be completely severed by an American administrative letter at a moment's notice,
then they can't rely on the cloud.
Exactly. Perhaps the ultimate form of verification and portability is a return to massive, localized, on-premise servers.
Like going back in time.
We could be looking at a forced reversal of the last 15 years of cloud computing history.
That is wild to think about. What happens to the global tech ecosystem when the only guaranteed way to ensure your artificial intelligence doesn't disappear on a Friday night is to physically lock the hardware inside your own basement?